Good morning. Welcome to our meeting. It's 9 a.m. on January 7th, 2025. And time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today are Commissioner Tony Olson, our Vice President, Commissioner-elect Julieta Altamirano Crosby, our Secretary, John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Colin Willenbrock, our Chief Legal Officer, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices at this time. We will start with the flag salute. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, with liberty and justice for all. Copies of the agenda are located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. Are there any items to be added or changes made to the published agenda, commissioners?
I have none.
Comments from the public is item three on today's agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes, and person should be recognized to speak from the sign-up card located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. If joining by Zoom, click raise hand or dial *9 if by phone. I will call on attendees to speak at the appropriate time. When you're called upon on a phone, dial *9 to unmute. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, please step up to the podium, use the microphone, state and spell your name, and indicate where you're from. Please remain at the podium while you speak and address the commissioners, not the audience. If you have documents or other materials to enter into the record, please hand them to the deputy clerk who will distribute them to the board. We appreciate your cooperation with our procedures. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. The first on our agenda is item one, commission business, 1A, oath of office, Julieta Altamirano Crosby, Commissioner District 2. So we introduce Valerie Beaufou, who will perform the oath of office for Julieta Altamirano Crosby. Your Honor.
Raise your right hand. I, Julieta Altamirano Crosby.
I, Julieta Altamirano Crosby.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
That I will support the Constitution and laws.
That I support the Constitution and laws.
Of the United States.
Of the United States.
And the Constitution and laws.
And the Constitution and laws.
Of the State of Washington.
Of the State of Washington.
And that I will faithfully.
And that I faithfully.
Impartially.
Impartially.
And honestly.
And honestly.
Perform and discharge.
Perform discharge.
The duties of the office.
The duties of the office.
Of Public Utility District Number 1.
Of Public Utility Number District Number 1.
Commissioner District 2.
Commissioner District 2.
For a 6-year term.
For a 6-year term.
According to law.
According to law.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability. I would like to call my mom, Matilde Navarrete Leiva, and my daughter, Daniela Altamirano Crosby, to do the oath in Spanish, the juramento de cargo en español. Aquí a un lado de la juez Valerie, y van a leer esto, pero en pedacito para que yo pueda repetirlo, ¿ok? Por partecita, Dani.
Yo, Julieta Altamirano Crosby.
Yo, Julieta Altamirano Crosby.
Juro,
afirmo solemnemente.
Que apoyaré la Constitución.
Que apoyaré la Constitución.
Y las leyes de los Estados Unidos.
Y las leyes de los Estados Unidos.
Y la Constitución.
Y la Constitución.
Y las leyes del Estado de Washington.
Y las leyes del Estado de Washington.
Y que desempeñaré y cumpliré fiel.
Y que desempeñaré y cumpliré
fiel.
Fiel.
Imparcial y honestamente.
Imparcial y honestamente.
Las responsabilidades del cargo de comisionada.
Las responsabilidades del cargo de comisionada.
Del Distrito 2.
Del Distrito 2.
Del Distrito de Servicios Públicos.
Del Distrito de Servicios Públicos.
Número 1.
Número 1.
Por un periodo de 6 años.
Por un periodo de 6 años.
De acuerdo con la ley.
De acuerdo con la ley.
Y al máximo de mis capacidades.
Y al máximo de mis capacidades. Gracias. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you to the residents of Snohomish County and Camano Island for trusting me with the privilege of representing you. The World Bank says the roads are the arteries through which the world's economy falls. Here at Snohomish County, we are that pulse, providing electricity and water, which are vital to life in our modern communities. Over the next 6 years with the Snohomish County Beauty, I commit to carrying forward the values of honesty, integrity, and transparency that have guided my work on the Lynwood City Council. It is an honor to be here among such great visionaries like John Harlow. Un aplauso, aplauso for him. Thank you. Commissioner Sid Logan and Commissioner Tania Olson. Together, we will continue to provide the most affordable, reliable, cleanest, and sustainable utility service in the region. Former Commissioner Rebecca Wall, thank you for being my mentor to ensure a smooth transition into my new role. Thank you so much. And also thank you to the people they are connected by Zoom, because I believe that my father, Nicolas Altamirano, is watching me there. And finally, I want to extend my deepest gratitude to my husband, Patrick, my daughter, Daniela, my parents, especially my mother, Matilde, who is here today, and the incredible volunteers, and to every single person, every single one, who has believed in my vision. Thank you for the vote on my part. Thank you.
I know you have some people that have traveled very far to come be here today with you. Is there anyone you'd like to introduce?
That's my mom, and my father couldn't come in. But yes, different people came for different cities and it's not for Snohomish, which deeply I deeply grateful to. Really appreciate it. Thank you. Can we say I would like to say a picture of what?
Yeah, we'll take a
break.
Yeah, we're going to take a 15-minute recess. So we'll be back here at 9:23.
There's only more than a room.
All right.
We've had more visitors today than we have all of last year. Okay, next is item 2 on our agenda, recognitions, declarations. We have 2A team of the month, the vegetation management team. We have Erin Janesco here, and we introduce the team. Good morning, Erin.
Good morning, commissioners. Erin Janesco, senior manager of regional design and construction services. It's my pleasure today to be here to recognize our January 2025 team of the month vegetation management. This group definitely represents what we talk about with team PVD and the teamwork that really goes on there day to day and behind the scenes. You look at the work that they do, Identifying the circuitry that needs trim, monitoring those cycles, trouble calls, the hundreds of miles that we trimmed just in 2024 is an example, hundreds of more miles in the backlog ready to go for 2025. It truly is a team effort, and they do it quietly behind the scenes, and just an awesome group, and happy to recognize them. I won't go through all the names because I'd probably butcher it, but I do want to at least go through the individual job classifications. Our tree notifiers, please raise your hand, please. We have two in-house tree crews. Raise your hands, guys. Our coordinators that help manage a lot of the contracts that go out, as well as the day-to-day. Raise your hands, Randy. We've got some admin staff as well. And last but not least, I also want to mention Randy Packabush, who's the manager. He's been here over 30 years, and he is retiring this April. Randy Conker. Just the last thing that I'll say about the group, and John and I have talked a lot about this, you know, the work that they do directly impacts our customers and reliability, and they do it very, very well. And so just an awesome job. Proud of the group. Keep going for 2025. So I'm not sure how we want to do pictures, questions, comments.
You might be one way to do it upstairs.
Yeah, we've got a picture to represent. So maybe we did come down there.
And oh, we get ribbon.
We show a picture. We can ribbon, see if anyone wants to use the microphone and talk.
I encourage it.
I'll just jump in here as well. And like Aaron said, the work that y'all do is extremely impactful on a daily basis, and then certainly when the chips are down and we have storm damage, especially like what we had in November, go above and beyond, and you're a big part of how well we restore power to our customers safely, and then how we keep the power on reliably throughout the year. So just a huge kudos to all that you do for our customers.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you can accept this on behalf. So here's a picture of some of the group.
Some of the group, a few missing today.
Yeah,
as well.
A few. Yeah.
What a jury duty is.
Yeah.
But yes, great honor. Well deserved for this group.
Well, thank you for all you do. I mean, it's so critical, and it's amazing the way you guys integrate with our public. Because not everyone likes having their trees trimmed, but you guys seem to really do a great job of navigating that. We do get them trimmed, and you can see the work. And I can see the difference when I go to other parts of the state where, you know, they're not trimmed. Power lines are laying in the road and things like that.
I want to say thank you for all the work that you do as well. It's amazing, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. You know me, I always got to go into history. At one time, our vegetation management program, many moons ago, is called the Scorched Earth Policy by our customers.
Cool.
And we had to send them out with guards in order to be able to do their work. Anyway, and the development of, we have a number of arbors, which is really confidence for the customer.
14, I think, on staff.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I read in the write-up, I know that a lot of work has been done on advance work with the customer, notifying the customer, explaining to the customer. That just reaps hundreds of dollars value to the customer in terms of how they represent the utility. There's nothing worse than a customer sitting out there that all of a sudden they see a big rig show up with buzz saws and start trimming down their favorite tree. So that advance work, I'm really, really pleased that that's been worked into the program.
Yeah, that's, again, the notification staff.
It
takes sometimes months to get those going on. Right now, Three Lakes that got hit from the storm pretty hard.
Yeah.
One of our biggest substation, so it's where my notifiers out there working on that. So we just put one person on it that draws it out for 6 months.
Well, and so, major storm, a lot of the public don't understand the significant amount of cleanup and maintenance work that has to be done afterward. Okay, I'm done.
Well, opportunity with team of the month or employee of the month. We always give an opportunity for someone to speak or multiple people to speak. No pressure, but if someone like to come to the microphone, and this is your chance. Tell how it really is. Or not.
Don't rush.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. And congratulations about your pending retirement.
Thank you. Thank you.
Pictures on the stairs.
Randy.
Thank you. Good.
That.
Remember, all right, next on the agenda is item three.
I do it again.
Comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public on items not on today's agenda? Please state and spell your last name for the record. So I have a Shannon Sessions who would like to speak. Good morning. You have 5 minutes.
Wow, 5 minutes.
You don't have to
use it all. Oh, 5 minutes. Thank you so much. I'm Shannon Sessions. You said you want me to spell my name?
That's okay.
Well, hello to all of you. I'm Shannon Sessions. I'm what a pleasure to be here. I'm a former longtime city, Linwood City Council member and City Council president, former. And I'm the executive director for Support 7, a long time, more than 40 years in South Snohomish County, the same area you serve. We serve alongside police and fire on scene 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to support victims and families alongside first responders on all unexpected deaths, including natural deaths, death by suicide, homicide, other fatalities, overdoses, and also our instant response team for house fires, apartment fires, anytime we have first responders out in the elements for long periods of time. And also, PUD is on scene with us often. And so I want to take this opportunity while I have this microphone, and I wish that more of the public was here during your public comment and your people to comment of what a wonderful job your employees do for our South Snohomish County, and well, all of the county for that matter. I know that, I know for a fact, because I wear so many hats in the community, that your residents know and your first responders know how your employees are also first responders. And I don't think they get enough credit for that. And so thank you very much for all the work they do and the sacrifices they do and for their families and those times that are being sacrificed. But most importantly, today, I'm here for Julieta Altamirano Crosby, because she is not only a dear friend of mine, but also a colleague who I highly respect. And I don't know if you realize it yet, or maybe you are starting to realize it, but how fortunate you are to have her. I understand that she has resigned from Linwood City Council, and it certainly is their loss. And I know that there was a lot of work done to make sure that that was not a legal conflict of interest beforehand, and that's why she was able to do it and make those promises to her voters. And I know that that is not a legal conflict of interest. However, she's made this sacrifice, and fortunately for you, she chose you. That is not to be taken lightly. I cannot tell you that enough. She is the most hardworking leader in this area. There's nobody who works harder than Julieta. She is more loyal and honest and high integrity than anybody else I know. And she brings people together, and she has a special way of doing that. And you are very fortunate. And hopefully it'll be worth it that she's had to also sacrifice other things for it. But I'm grateful to be here today. And I look forward to seeing all the new and great things you do. Congratulations. Thank you to all of you.
Thank you, Kim, for your word.
I'm not seeing any other hands up, and I'm not seeing any other hands up online. So we'll move on to item four, our consent agenda. 4A, approval of the minutes for the regular meeting of December 17, 2024. 4B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments. And 4C, consideration of certification / ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay, are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Please raise your hand. See any hands up? Are there any questions or comments from you, commissioners?
I have none.
I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Next is item five, updates. We have Aaron Sweeney here to provide the media update. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning. Aaron Sweeney, lead communications specialist. This is our media report. So we do this one to give commissioners an idea of where the PUD is showing up in the news, and what we're doing with press releases, how we're talking to the public, with our publications, with just kind of a report out on all the things that we do. Oh, and I have to give a shout out to vegetation management. We have a Grow Paperless campaign that started just January 1st, and we're really trying to get more and more of our customers to go paperless. Every month, we're going to have a drawing, and one of the prizes is free tree or plant from a local nursery, and vegetation management was awesome working with us and getting that put together. So we had a nice ribbon cutting out of Jennings Park Substation. Jennings Park Substation is going to be a huge benefit to the community in Marysville, a real central part to a high voltage line coming in there. It was a great opportunity for us to talk to not only folks in the city, but our own people about really the benefits that are going to come from this kind of a substation and this infrastructure. And so it was a good event. I didn't get tons of coverage, but had a little bit of coverage in some trade publications. So just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, I'll say I was very impressed at how we had almost all of the members of the Marysville City Council come, and the mayor came and spoke. I hope it's another opportunity to get our word out about what we're doing. And I hope we have more ribbon cuttings when we build substations in the future.
I think that's a great idea. And I think, like you said, even if we don't get lots of press out there, we can make a real impression on our partners and the people who are helping with these big projects.
Yeah, because they're sort of thought leaders. They're ones that people go to and ask questions about us and about what's going on.
Yeah, what's this big substation going in? What's it going to do? Now they can talk, about it and the many benefits that
come. Happens to the old one, yeah.
Commissioner Wolf had a really nice piece in Linwood Times from the last commission meeting. Wanted to point that out. Really nice tribute to all that she's done, and then a welcome to Commissioner Altamore on the cross as well. So I thought that was a really good piece and a great photo. Quick roundup on some stuff that's been happening. We put out we worked actually with Wilden Group on a press release that went out that was picked up by and some kind of financial news organizations on a program that we're doing with them to work on energy efficiency and do some kind of planning around how we'll deal with telecom and data centers coming into our territory in the future. There's also a little bit of information on the bomb cyclone. Snohomish County put out a press release, and we backed it up with some of the damage costs and the money that went out to repair infrastructure. So that was Everett Herald and Cairo. And then continuing storm coverage. We had a couple storms in December, about 100,000 plus outages. We're just working with the media and talk about that and talk about pointing people to our outage map and all that kind of thing to make sure that we know where to go and get information.
Yes, of course.
That's a comment. Well, first of all, thank you so much for everything that you do. I witness it firsthand and social media, all the information, the updates regarding the employees, and I cannot have enough words to say thank you, everyone that were outside to try to take care of all the community members in Snohomish County and Camano. So, but I'm just curious. I mean, I see that you collaborate a lot with different social media like Herald, Tidal, and others. So,
yeah.
Are you considered to maybe perhaps work with other media? They are not necessarily in English. I'm talking about it because it's Snohomish County, that's the population is a lot of demographics. We serve the first language is no English.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy to, if it's so, to collaborate with you. And somehow I can do translations if you want me to. So I'm so happy to help. I mean, somehow when the storms or whatever happens or prevention, we can share and the language they speak would be better. So
we'd love that. Yeah, any way we can get our messages out.
But thank you.
Yeah, for sure. And we have staff that can do some of that translation work. But yeah, connections and yeah, putting people in touch with us. Right. Yeah.
Relationships that are crucial.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We do have staff.
Frankly. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I believe I would like staff to look into it in terms of logistics. We have professional staff. And they typically handle all of our communications. Because I think it would include other communications media that for Asians, for Islanders, for there are other represented in this county.
Yes, and we do have a service that we have that we can.
Yes, I know. But I wouldn't want to leave the impression that I, as a commissioner, support that you go out and do it right away, that you could look into it.
Well, I'm going to rephrase this for clarification. I'm genuine, and maybe I'm ignorant that I offer that, but the point is not that. The point is how we can unify efforts, and I'm glad to hear they are professional people in your area doing the translation. So.
Yeah.
And I'm aware, not because I'm Latina, I work only with Latinos. I collaborate with all the community leaders that speak different languages, and that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, and there's many of those publications that are really important in those communities. So for us to get a foot in the door to be able to talk to them, that would be fantastic.
Thank you.
Just wanted to point this out. I thought this was really great. The Seattle Times in their Christmas edition gave us a shout out, gave all utility workers a shout out, but we were the first name they mentioned, which I thought was cool. We also had
was bold your enhancement, or is that the way it was?
No, I think the bold was my enhancement. Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah, and there was also a rave a couple of days after the storm that somebody put into the Seattle Times, just wrote in and thanked Snohomish PUD in particular. So really, really cool. And, you know, I mean, you've probably seen the news about the Everett Herald. You know, Josh O'Connell, the publisher, just left. They've obviously been struggling with layoffs, things like that. We're seeing more and more of our stuff show up in the Seattle Times. I think that they are coming down and covering us more. I've had two or three of their reporters reach out to me in the last couple of months. So you might see more of our PUD information in the Times going forward. Publications, we had a nice story in the NWPPA magazine detailing all the work around the Climate Commitment Act, getting those funds, fast tracking out the door, as bill credits, all the work that went into the Home Electrification and Appliance Rebate Program. I worked with Jeff Feinberg and Allison Grinchell on all that. And just, you know, for me, I wrote the story, but, you know, they did all the work, and it's just a reflection of all the work that all the teams came together and did. And then finally, I had a really nice call out in the Snohomish STEM newsletter. Jeremy Babcock and Kelly Singletary visited some students, high school and college at Everett Community College, walked them through what it means to be an IT professional. Really just giving them kind of a hands-on real life experience of that and just talking to them. And it was a really great event. And thank you to Krista for some really nice photos. That's all for me. Any questions for Aaron Commissioner?
No. I haven't.
Yeah, I have just a quick comment. We had a pretty large outage in Arlington Friday night. And you know, in a vacuum, all the stuff on social media, right? It's this blew up.
Yeah.
Whatever blow up means. I see that common storm.
Yeah.
Transformers blowing up. And I'm wondering if there's some education or do we do some education around how,
yeah.
You know, what you see when you see an arc isn't necessarily something being destroyed, but something actually protecting the system.
Yeah, usually it's fuse blowing or something like that. And we've done some of that communication on social. It might make sense to do maybe a graphic or something and just have it in our back pocket. So if that does happen, we can just post that and say, this is what you're seeing. This is, the world's not ending. This isn't strange.
Yeah.
My friend texted me and he's like, it felt like Stranger Things. Like, oh, the light, you know, it's like, okay, that's not what's
happening. Yeah, it was.
It's a lot simpler than that, right? You know,
so. You really want it.
It seemed to be really unsettling to people because I think there was no wind and it wasn't terribly cold. It was just out of the blue. We're in the dark at 10 o'clock.
Well, on social media, you know.
I know that works, but it's just, we've done so much recently with, you know, educating people about generators and feedback. And that made me a graph. I mean, it'd be a nice idea when we have storms or something. Anyway,
you know,
just wanted to bring it up.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, next item six, public hearing, 6A, cost of service analysis and preliminary rate design. I will now convene a public hearing on the cost of service analysis and preliminary rate design. Am I in the right spot? I think I am.
Yeah.
I am, okay. And Peter Donauer is here, available to answer any questions and provide the prior presentation. So, are there any comments from the public regarding the cost of service rate design and preliminary rate design, cost of service analysis and preliminary rate design for 2025-2029? So please raise your hand. Okay, are there any comments or questions from you, commissioners? And I'm wondering, Commissioner Altman-Rakarski, if you'd like to see the presentation. I don't remember if you saw it or not.
I tried to join all the meetings, and yes, I had the opportunity to see that. So if I have any questions, I'm so happy to reach out. So,
great.
Okay.
I
do have a comment. I would ask my fellow commissioners if in this particular instance, and for our water rates that are upcoming in a future meeting, that the board has the prerogative and a responsibility to our, to those we serve, to take, you know, to take a look at staff's recommendation in terms of rate changes. And what was missing for me in this last staff took our input, went back and did the analysis, came forward with some options based upon our input. But what was missing for me is coming back to us, and I asked the question, now, what does this mean? And I was told, well, it just means it's going to take more years to, and for me, it would be helpful to come back and say, these are the assumptions that we used over and above cost of service when we communicated with you commissioners in terms of how we're moving some of our changing in terms of covering our costs, and that to remind us of what that basis was, so that I and the public can understand that I am making a decision informed, and I'm informed that what the potential outcomes would be, positive and negative. So I'm asking that we include that. I just kind of felt staff was just conceding, okay, we're going to do this.
Yes, Peter Downhower, Senior Manager of Rates, Economics, Energy Risk Management. Appreciate the comment, and that's something that we can definitely accommodate in future presentations on metrics that we can use to think about the risk involved with moving faster or slower, and the questions about equity between rate classes and within rate classes as well. Something we've been looking at as a goal this year to be able to dive into more deeply. And that would, I think, answer what you're asking for is, you know, what's the implication of this choice for the future?
Yeah, that would help me. Other than the answer I got was, well, it moves everything out a few more years. That I don't think that's not helpful to me. I need to understand we've gone down this road, and I need to understand that I've given direction on something, and I need to understand what that means. So that's my comment, and I ask my commissioners if they're comfortable with that.
Yeah, I think it always behooves us to understand.
Yeah,
approving or not approving
you
something,
know, that
what the ramifications are.
Not, yeah,
all the ramifications.
Okay.
I think that I'd rather see the presentation again because I know that we are going to do a motion and approve something. So I want to make sure the presentation recommendations also that you give to us. So
sure,
if it's possible. Sorry.
No, that's okay. We can we're going to be continuing this to the
okay.
next, so we can have the presentation of the next meeting as well, right?
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah,
I mean it'll be evident it was in last week's package.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not asking for this to be done with this particular rate change process, but in the future. Because
yes,
I think this is throwing in something that, you know, the board has already determined that this is the direction that we will take. So coming back with something that's not helpful now.
As
down
far
the road, we're
right,
done.
Understanding
we're
right.
at the second spot plan here.
Yeah.
And we all agree on that, correct?
Yes. Just to be clear, Commissioner Olson, so I don't mean to interrupt this conversation, but we, you know, one thing we talked about last time was the availability of AMI data, and this will be sort of really critical for actually achieving what you've asked for there. And so that's going to be something that probably is a task for this year to work on to be able to do that.
And I understand that, but what coming forward to us would receive briefings. Yes, that lead up to, you know, then COSA and the determination. That was all brought forward to us based on staff's recommendation. And I still think that rationale should come back to me in terms of what you have proposed for and why. And so... Yes, more metrics would help, but the information has already been given to us, and we just need to have it reported again. In other words, you've made this determination. However, this is what we based our original analysis on and recommendation of rate change, and this is why. It's just very simple. This helps me.
Okay. Any more questions or comments? I will call for a motion to continue the public hearing on the cost of service analysis and preliminary rate design 2025-2029.
I move the public hearing of the cost service analysis and preliminary rate designs 2025-2029 to be continued to Tuesday, January 21, 2025 at 9 a.m. at 2320 California Street in Everett.
Thank you. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried unanimously. Next, 6B, 2025 water general rate proposal, City of Everett pass through. I'll now convene a public hearing on the 2025 rate general retail rate proposal, City of Everett pass through. Christina Arndt here available to answer any questions and provide the prior presentation if necessary. Well, first ask if there are any comments from the public regarding the 2025 water general rate retail proposal, City of Everett pass through. Any hands up? Are there any questions or comments from you, commissioners?
We received previous briefing on this.
We did.
However, Commissioner, if.
Commissioner, would you like to see the presentation again?
I think that we're. I'm going to have the opportunity to see that later as well. So,
oh, all right.
That's okay. Good. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Then I will call for a motion to continue the public hearing on the 2025 water general rate, general retail rate proposals, City of Everett pass through.
I'm on the public hearing on the 2025 water general retail rate proposal, City of Everett pass through. We continue to Tuesday, January 21. 2025 at 9 a.m. 2320 California Street in Everett.
Okay, I'll call for a motion. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried unanimously. Next, item 7, public hearing and action. We have our first quarter 2024 surplus disposition supplemental. I'll call for a motion.
Oh, I'm so lazy. Okay. Based on a staff recommendation that the items are no longer necessary or useful to the district, I move that those items listed on Exhibit A of first quarter 2024 surplus disposition supplemental be declared surplus and be sold for high bid or disposed for according to policy in the first quarter of 2024.
Just a quick correction. That should be the first quarter of 2025.
Okay.
Okay.
So now to be a public hearing,
yes.
And we have Colleen Murphy available to answer any questions.
This is my packet.
Are there any comments from the public regarding the surplus property? Hands up. The room or online. Are there any questions or comments from you, commissioners?
I have no questions.
No.
I will now close the public hearing and I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Next is item 8A, commission reports. Are there any reports, commissioners?
I don't have any either.
Happy New Year, everybody. Next, we'll go to 8B, our commission event calendar. Are there any changes to the event calendar?
Our meetings with PPC and PNAP this week are virtual. Typically, they're in person.
But that meeting is going to be in person or by Zoom?
The meetings this week are virtual.
Okay.
They typically, however, they'll do meet in person.
Thank you for the clarification.
Or
yeah.
They also do virtual. PPC, that's virtual, right?
Yes, it's
virtual. That's how I attend.
PPC allows for virtual options. So. I don't know what the topic is, I haven't looked, but there's always a Wednesday afternoon one. It's always very informational and really sort of intended for our audience and general education on the subject. And then the Thursday morning meeting is the largest board meeting you'll ever see with a table full of leaders throughout the Northwest. And then peanut gallery where we sit that's probably twice that size. So it's also very interesting at times and sometimes not. And then Friday we have peanut. And peanut is some very fascinating information.
And I also have all that information that we can go over when you need
Okay. Is there anything else, Allison, on Ben's calendar that we're missing?
No, just your chamber meeting.
Okay. Thank you. Next, we have 8C, our November 2024 district dashboard. Any questions about the dashboard? I saw our recordable injuries is trending the way we want to.
Did this go in the storm?
It would have the storm in it, yes.
That's remarkable.
Yeah.
Well, no, you're laughing at me.
Well, it is remarkable. This is not, if you just look at our SADE goal for the year.
Yeah, I know.
Not a good year.
Not a good year. But there's a reason.
Yes, exactly. Lots of storms, a huge storm, and that's why I think it will be important for us to work on developing a non-storm reliability number that will give us a better assessment on things that we can control
Yeah, I scraped myself off the ceiling, but when I remembered you were going to do that.
Yeah.
I apologize.
That's okay. Are there any questions or comments, commissioners, on the district dashboard?
I have none.
To your comment, Commissioner Logan, and this will, you'll see this at the year end dashboard as well. We ended the year with the same number of ORIs, OSHA recordable injuries, as we had in 2022, which was our best year ever.
Wow.
But even more impressive was that our severity rate for 2024 this year was the lowest it's ever been. And to me, the severity rate is a better indicator of the cultural progression that we've made in regards to our safety culture.
Wonderful. And I think you said before, or we've had presenters say before, that during storms, we actually don't have many accidents.
Yeah, typically we don't. A lot of that is just because they're working long hours, but the type of work they're doing and the teamwork and the adrenaline on the type of work that they're doing usually can focus is higher on working safely. Less likely to have complacency set in when you're doing a lot of that type of heavy storm work.
Next, we'll move on to item 8D, discussion of representatives for organization and committees for 2025. We've got on page 154 of our packet, we've got the various things we were on last year. Commissioner, what are your thoughts for this year?
I would again propose that I serve in more of an alternate role because I think it's extremely important for our new commissioner to interact and be out there on a regional and a national level with the utility industry. And so I would recommend that the ABPA remain as it is now, and that I just in terms of format, it would help me if we pull the policymakers up under ABPA.
Okay.
While I cannot be an alternate for policymakers, because that's an appointed position, but that's just a formatting problem issue. Energy Northwest, I would again just change Rebecca Wolf to you, and also NWPPA to have you take the lead seat for the Northwest Public Power Association.
Work for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's right. You all the hard work.
I just
get to
be so happy.
Well, we haven't had an in the UK right now for a
okay.
So we need to.
Yeah, there's a proposed motion in there.
Okay. I move adoption of the representatives to organizations and committees for 2025 as proposed, which is substituting Julieta Altamirano Crosby for Rebecca Wolf. Name.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, the delegates. Any questions or comments, commissioners? I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion carries. Next is 8E, our 2024 Treasury Budget Forecast and Major Project Status Report for November. If Sarah Bond, if anyone has any questions about the report. Any questions or comments, commissioners?
I don't have any questions, but I believe that the clerk is working with staff around the organization. This is the type of thing that I believe would be very helpful. Or really have to sit down and one-on-one or
I would love to
with a group to go through this.
Thank you.
And there are other things as well.
Really appreciate it.
I have a question for Sarah. This is more a question for John. John, we seem to be going over budget in so many different areas. And I know that there's good news about that. It means we're getting a lot of projects done. But all right, what are your thoughts about how this is going to impact us going forward? And is this just a spurious thing for this year? Because we've often been under.
Yeah, if you go back to how we started this year, being upside down and right out of the gates in January, and we started making some adjustments. We made those adjustments with the ability to flex as we went farther into the year to see what our cash position was and what projects we would want to be able to either accelerate or push back. And we really are trying to land in a place where good place in reserves and a good place that we don't get so far behind the eight ball on our capital projects and our O&M projects or O&M work. So we are a little bit over budget, but that would have been dollars that we would have had to push into 25. Mm-hmm. And since we had the capacity and the capability to get that work done, you know, and still land the reserve target, you know, kind of within that range, we chose to go ahead and get that work done. Because again, some of that work got pushed off from our budget constraints in 23.
Yeah, right.
So again, we really want to manage not just to land under budget, but land in a way that it manages to that reserve target.
Right.
We get the work done that we know needs to get done on our system.
And when you look at when you look at specific areas, categories, particularly on the operations side of the house, I look at the bottom line because of the nature of our work. Things will necessarily, as you move through the year, things change a lot. And so I always kind of look at the bottom line in terms of the CEO has the flexibility to. So if one area seems to be well over budget, I would imagine that if we look deeper, we would see that overall. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Separate.
Yes, in general, yes.
In general, okay.
Yeah, and I agree. It's just this report, we've got more things over budget than under budget. So it's just a little different than the ones we looked at the last few years, but I understand that. Any other questions about the report?
No, I don't have any.
Okay. All right. We'll move on to item 9, our governance planning calendar. Page 169. Any comments or changes? Well, I guess we don't have any changes to the governance planning calendar. Have a TV scheduled education workshop on our DEI program. Time of day rates. Looking at our governance policies.
We did a couple meetings ago, and also just for information, Sherelle will be here for an updated states on February 4th, and then we'll have more information after that when we'll hopefully have a retreat with some of that.
Yeah.
In terms of our plan, maybe that doesn't come here, but were we not going to have a visit with our governance policy and our governance structure at a special meeting?
Correct. And that'll be in the next couple months in quarter one.
Okay.
Probably towards the end. And that's the same thing, that it does include the DEI information.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Any questions on that? We'll move on to item 10, our CEO General Manager briefing session. This item is for the board and CEO General Manager to discuss issues among ourselves with PUD staff. So good morning, John.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
It's different to work with this new format.
Yeah.
You
got to get your old girl up to speed on this.
I think it's all up to speed on it.
So first up is Ryan Collins with our 2025 legislative session preview.
Good morning, commissioners. Happy New Year. For the record, my name is Ryan Collins, and I am the District State Government Relations and External Affairs Specialist 3. I'm here to present to you, it's that time of year again, a preview of the 2025 legislative session. Here's our agenda today, which again is for informational purposes only. We'll start by previewing the 2025 legislative session, describe our team and what we do for the district, discuss major changes to the state leaderships since the November elections, discuss break down the chamber's political compositions and the changes to Snohomish's legislative delegation, review the legislative calendar for this long session, discuss big themes pursued by the Democratic majority, as well as discuss issues in the energy and environment space, look at how two major initiatives from November will shape policy discussions this spring, highlight significant budget challenges facing lawmakers this session, and then finally explain how I plan to report to the commission and share some examples of that reporting that you all will receive. And at any point, please feel free to interrupt me if you have any questions. So once again, I'm Ryan Collins and I lead the State Government Relations Program for Snohomish PUD. I primarily work in Olympia during the state legislative session representing the district. I have 12 years of government relations experience, including policy and advocacy work in Washington, D.C. And on a personal note, my wife and I just welcomed a new family member to our married band this past July. He's turning 6 months old, actually, on the day that session starts, which is great. And then outside of the legislative session, you can usually find me with a book in my hand somewhere in the woods. So, as for the rest of our small but mighty team, internally, we've got Clinton Harrington, who helps me track and analyze bills during the session and coordinates our state program year-round from here in Everett, as well as sometimes down in Olympia. We also have Marian Daka, who I believe is on the phone with us, who is our contract lobbyist and also represents Snohomish PUD down in Olympia with me. And while I didn't include her on this slide, I'd be remiss if I didn't also include Kim Johnston, who leads the government relations and strategy team and helps me guide all aspects of the state program. During the legislative session, our primary role is to track all legislative proposals, work with our subject matter experts at the utility to gather feedback and engage with lawmakers when one of those proposals impacts the PUD. Additionally, we frequently report back to the PUD on legislative developments. As a team, we strive to be solutions focused and data driven, educating policymakers, agencies, and the executive on our industry. This helps us foster positive relationships and ensure decision makers are informed with the right information. So, headed into 2025, we are going to be seeing some significant changes at the state executive's level. On January 15th, we will have a new governor, a new attorney general, a new public lands commissioner, and a new insurance commissioner. In the legislature, we also have a new Senate Democratic Majority Leader, Jamie Peterson from Seattle. He's a longtime member of the legislature who will be filling the role after the retirement of Senator Andy Bilton. As for the composition of the chambers, Democrats continue to retain control of both House and Senate and increase their majorities by one in both chambers. As for the Snohomish PUD delegation, it actually didn't change a whole lot either. The only change came in the 12th legislative district, which covers portions of Southeast Snohomish County and the city of Monroe. Representative Keith Gaynor won his election in November and is now Senator Keith Gaynor. This left his Washington House seat open, which is going to be filled by Brian Burnett, who prevailed in November. So he'll be representing the 12th district. As for the calendar, the 2025, as I mentioned at the top, 25 legislative session is a long session encompassing 105 days. The first day of the session is this coming Monday on January 13th, and sine die when the legislature gavels out is April 27th. As you may know, there are several important dates between the 13th and 27th, which we call cutoff dates. These important cutoff dates are points in the legislative calendar that legislation needs to move beyond to remain alive. The first of these days is on day 40, which this year falls on February 21st, and is when legislation needs to have moved out of its House of Origin Policy Committee. As you can see by the length of time before the first cutoff, long sessions provide more time to hold hearings and engage stakeholders in hopes of successfully navigating complex policy challenges. Long sessions also mean we're most likely to see a lot of more bill introductions, probably around 2,000 by the time of that first cutoff date. Long sessions also mark the start of the biennium, where lawmakers develop and pass the state's three biennial budgets, which are the operating, transportation, and capital. Just one quick note on that. I'm using biennium and biennial. The only reason I'm using biennium is for the time period itself. Biennial I'll use as an adjective, so like biennial budgets and so forth. So what are the big themes shaping up at the start of this session? Since November, lawmakers have already pre-filed about 300 bills, since which will be officially introduced at the start of session. As I mentioned at the beginning, we anticipate seeing upward about 2,000 by the end. Thus far, the major themes that we're seeing, though, are affordability with a general focus on cost of living in the state, the potential for another year of housing, the challenges around the budget process, and last but not least, transportation funding challenges due to a growing project costs and decreasing gas revenue. As an electric utility, it probably comes as no surprise that most of our focus is on the energy and environment policy space. This year, several factors will be influencing this policy area, including the new executive whose leaders have unknown priorities, the recently failed initiative to repeal the state's carbon credit market, and a larger Democratic majority. As I mentioned at the top, general budget dynamics will also have an impact. That doesn't just include the state side, that also includes federal, as there's a lot of uncertainty about the future of federal clean energy subsidies and grants, as well as the potential state budget shortfall. More narrowly, in the utility sector, we're focused on resource adequacy and implementing the state's clean energy targets. All of this, from our perspective, kind of boils down to and underwrites the continued legislative support for the state's energy transition. As we get closer to the actual implementation dates, such as the Clean Energy Transformation Act's energy targets, there's a growing interest amongst lawmakers on the cost and affordability of the state's energy transition and what it means for Washingtonians. On a practical level, this means that we can anticipate targeted legislation that is more narrow in scope. As for specific proposals, we anticipate policy discussions centered on two questions, really. How can we create more generation and capacity, and how can we address current bottlenecks? That likely boils down to behind the meter generation conversations, how to build more transmission and update current transmission lines, as well as other efforts to untangle and quicken the energy project permanent insight.
Do you see any change in the legislatures about their understanding of obvious adequacy and reliability? It's interesting to see Seattle Times editorial piece. Seems like maybe there's a growing awareness. And what are your thoughts about?
Yes, I think by and large, more and more focus on resource adequacy is kind of coming to the forefront, particularly in the committees of jurisdiction that we work in. The hearing that you're referring to that the Seattle Times talked about was at the Senate. I want to say like 70% of that was specifically just on resource adequacy targets. What are we going to do? So there is definitely a growing interest trying to understand more, particularly the Senate leader, Joe Wynn from West Seattle, is going to be appointed to the Department of Commerce. He's very focused on these issues as well. And so I think him moving over to the department will also keep those issues front and center. You may recall this past November, there were several ballot initiatives. I want to highlight two, given the potential impacts on future policy discussions this spring. The first is Initiative 2066, which prohibits the state, counties, and cities from banning or discouraging the use of natural gas. This initiative was the only one of four to pass on November's ballot, with 52% of Washingtonians supporting it. While the initiative doesn't directly impact the district's operations, there are several tangential effects. There's a likely reduced incentive to adopt energy efficiency technology, such as heating and cooling technology, like heat pumps. There's also the repealing of provisions in a law that passed last year, HB 1589, which required Puget Sound Energy to coordinate with overlapping utilities if customers moved from gas to electric. And then last but not least, state departments are going to have to redo a lot of their rulemaking around clean energy or clean building laws as well. As for the initiative's status, it's looking like it's going to be tied up in court for the foreseeable future. Both proponents and opponents have filed separate lawsuits in court filings. Those will likely have to resolve themselves out before any legislative or state action really proceeds on this issue.
It's fascinating.
It's certainly an interesting time to be an observer.
Yeah.
Next is the is Initiative 2117, which would have prohibited the state from implementing a cap and invest program and would have repealed the state's Climate Commitment Act, or CCA. The initiative failed in November's ballot, 62-38%. And since it did not pass, the PUD will continue to comply with the law's emissions requirements and participate in the Climate Commitment Act's auctions, allowance auctions, as it has before. As you may recall, the state has actually raised significant revenue from the Climate Commitment Act carbon markets. Those funds from those auctions will remain available to projects that depend upon state appropriations, including several county projects, transportation projects primarily, like the Port of Everett's electrification plans, as well as light rail expansion and the state's build out of the electric vehicle infrastructure. Importantly to Olympia lawmakers, the state's clean energy transition is now voter approved. And the majority now feels very confident in, to continue to regulate carbon as it has. That also means that the Climate Commitment Act will continue to be a budget bright spot for budget writers this session.
Yeah. Just a quick comment is, you know, this one was very interesting because I think voters probably were pretty informed about the cost to them of it. I think the proponents did a good job of helping explain what gasoline prices were because of it. And so I think to pass so overwhelmingly really is a strong message from the public to the state and to us about how people feel about these climate initiatives.
I would agree. I think that's certainly what the takeaway that lawmakers in Olympia are taking as well.
I expected the inverse.
Yeah.
I was really pleasantly surprised.
Brave new world. I have mentioned the budget being a particularly contentious issue this year. That's because to maintain current spending levels, the legislature needs to find approximately between $10 and $12 billion just for its operating budget over the next 4 years. The transportation budget is also facing a shortfall of around $8 billion over the next 10. What the shortfalls do is they create financial and political challenges that are going to impact all policy discussions this session. So you can expect budget negotiations to last throughout the session and really dominate the policy conversation going forward. On to reporting. So before I close, I wanted to briefly describe the process for how I plan to report to the commission for the rest of the session. Throughout the state legislative session, the commission will receive reports on high impact bills in our key legislation report. The key legislation report typically includes 10 to 15 high impact bills that we're engaging on. These reports are intended to help the commission understand the impacts of the key legislation and provide transparency on how state government relations is engaging with lawmakers. The report also helps track as bills work their way through the process. The commission will receive key legislation reports at every meeting through April, and I will provide formal presentations on all key legislation at every other meeting during session. In the off meetings, I will also be available virtually since I'll be down in Olympia to answer any questions. Just for quick examples, to help familiarize yourself with this, this is from last year. We begin the report by providing a summary of all the different pieces of the legislation and kind of where they are in the process. And then we do a deeper dive into each piece of legislation. Here I pulled up a bill from last year, the Solar Consumer Protections Bill that we ended up supporting. At the top of the slide, you'll see the bill number, the title, as well as some keywords associated with the legislation. Below that, you'll see a box for the PUD's position if we have taken one, specific impacts to the PUD if there are any, a current summary of the bill, as well as any specific updates and legislative actions to the right. At the very bottom, you can see a little tracker of where exactly in the process the bill is. This was the key legislation report at the beginning of the session last year, and this is what it looks like at the end. Again, you can see the title still at the top, summary, support, all of that's there. On the right side, you can then see there are new updates provided as we move through the process. And then again, at the bottom, you now see that tracker is all filled out with the bill going through to the governor's signature. And with that, that's the preview. And I'll see if there are any other questions.
Questions?
There are questions, but it's an observation. This has been in flux in terms of improving it. Mm-hmm. And from a policymaker's perspective, this is
great. Well, glad to hear that the format has worked. We're here. We're glad to hear it. And again, if there's any other suggestions, feedback, or comments, we're always looking for opportunities to continually improve.
Yeah, I'll echo that. We're going to talk about that this afternoon, but our shared learning, but the four pillars are just so helpful to understand the lens at which we look through some of these things, which are a little, you know, some of them are pretty straightforward. Some can sort of be challenging for positions, so it really helps clarify things.
Absolutely. It's an art and a science.
Yeah. I hope you can strike a good work-life balance.
We're happy. I'll see if I can bring this level. He's actually honestly the best persuading tool that I have.
So. Any other questions or comments?
No, thank you for the presentation, but I wondered if it's any way how I can get the information for last year for the bills day.
Yeah, I can easily send the last year's key legislation report.
Okay, thank you.
Right, great job, Ryan. Next up, we have our 2025 Water Utility General Rate Retail Rate Proposal and Christina Harnes. Good morning, Christina.
Christina Art, Manager at the Water Utility. And we are briefing you on some of the additional scenarios for the proposed 2025 Water General Retail Rates Adjustment. and there is no action actually required today. So again, we're just gonna go through a couple of the scenarios that we pulled together based on discussions that we had at the December 17th meeting and show that what those impacts are that were being asked for at that meeting. So this is going through a sample rate scenario impact. We did focus on the single family residential as that's the majority of our customers. And we did break it out based on our average water user as well as high end water users. But to note 82% of our water utility single family residents, those customers are not really a 10 CCF on average water consumption, excuse me. Majority of our customers are in that 7 CCF. Going with the 8.25% rate increase as proposed, the difference between dropping to 7.25 and 6.25 in total is roughly 50 cents to a dollar, depending on if we chose to go with 7.25 or 6.25 for our average user. And then about 64 cents, as you can see, between going from 8.25 to 7.25 for our high-end users. The impact to our days cash on hand, if we were to look at just our current glide path and where we're looking to get to 150 days cash on hand by 2029, these are the impacts that it does have. Highlighted in yellow, we would meet our days cash on hand, but slightly, not by much. And in the red, we would not meet those days cash on hand fiscal targets.
But what are the assumptions? Obviously, I understand the assumption for the first year. What are the assumptions for the following year? What rate increases are built in to those?
Right. So based on what we were presenting in December, the only 2 years that we focused on adjusting were 2025 and 2026 to drop them below anything above 10%. The rest of them did not change. So in the, if we were looking at say 7.25, 2025 through 2028 would actually be 7.25 each of those years, and then dropping to 4.75 after that. And then in looking at the 6.25, 2025 and 2026 would both drop to that 6.25. 27 and 28, we did not change because we were only looking at adjusting for the years that were above 10. So those would remain at 7.25 and then again dropping to 4.75.
So I guess what I'm asking is, if we decide on the 7.25 option, doesn't necessarily mean we're going to end up in the red in 2030, right? That we would because that has the same assumptions that we had in the staff recommendations.
We would, because the 2025 and 2026, we would be dropping below 10% and leaving the rest of the assumptions the same. We would end up in those 28 through 30 years not meeting the 150 days cash on hand target if we were to remain on that trajectory, which is what we're currently doing. But if we choose to go with the 7.25, the water utility is prepared to budget and manage that.
So I guess what I'm trying to understand is if we stay on the trajectory to keep rate increases collectively between the pass through from Everett and ours at or below 10%, and is there a scenario where we don't go 8.25 this year, but we end up these later years not in the red? That's what I'm trying to understand.
It would be.
Yeah.
To directly answer that question, no. Without modifying the out years increases, elevating those, depending on the assumptions that we're making of where we would land year over year for reserves. But put that aside, to me, there's two things. One, on the assumption, and I just got this information from our finance department this morning, days cash on hand, we are forecasting now to land approximately 10 more days cash on hand with the water utility.
You mean
than originally forecasted and what this forecast was based on.
Okay.
So that would change, for example, the 2026, based on everything else staying equal, that 2026, we would likely be over the target of 100 days. So just to say we're landing the reserves greater, approximately 10 days, than what was built into the assumptions here in our original forecast. The other thing that I think it's worth kind of thinking about, ignore the red and the length of time that the board is comfortable getting to that 150 days. We've been at 90 days for, you know, a considerable period of time, for my understanding of the history of our reserves target. We had lots of conversations with Scott on getting to that 150 based on what we're hearing from rating agencies, what our peers are doing in the industry. But we can get there in whatever trend line or trajectory that the board is comfortable with managing the revenue adjustments or rate impacts to our customers. So, you know, that red is a little bit misleading, meaning we're not hitting that target. We're not hitting those targets that we had originally forecasted or put out there on that trend line. But for me, I'm not concerned if we have to push that reserves target of 150 out a few more years and have a slower climb to that. And that helps the impact to our customers on the size of the revenue or size of the rate increase or revenue adjustment. And especially, again, this is all based on assumptions for the out years, right? You know, a lot of things can change. It doesn't take much to be, you know, like we're going to land this year. And we are typically, because we have budgeted fairly conservative on the revenue side and cost side, although we are getting better, as noted on our capital spend in water. But assuming there's a little bit of conservatism in there, we can adjust that in the years going forward. This is just to try to put a 5-year plan in place based on what those original targets that we had recommended to the board. But again, we have lots of opportunity to adjust year over year as we continue to push that five-year forecast out.
So this is a great graphic. Thank you very much. So one of the things that's important on there is an asterisk for 2029.
Yes.
When we're anticipating going out for bonds. So I guess the multiple million dollar question is, if we go out for bonds and we're only at 140 days or 130 days, when we last went out and how many days we were. I know rating agencies want more, and I understand, but I'm just wondering if you have some thoughts about what harm we might do ourselves.
I can't remember how many days we were back then either, but we went out at the end of 2023. So I want to say we were closer to 200 at that time. and they had the comments at that time, but I really feel like in talking to the rating agencies that we'll be able to talk to them about that and speak to the fact that we actually have come to you with getting to 150 and we are actively working on that.
And so I realize that the dollars are not much for household, but there's just something about a combined rate increase of 10% or more, unless we have to do it, that really concerns me. And I think it'll be concerning to the public. We're so upset about how everything goes up in prices. and I understand it.
Yep.
So I guess I like the 7.25% one. I'd love to hear from my fellow commissioners what their thoughts are. Commissioner Wilson, I know you you were not comfortable last time in doing something other than what staff
recommended. Philosophy on in terms of strategic rate planning is different.
Yeah.
And I'm always concerned that you hold. Shortchange yourself, and I know you're telling me that, yeah, we're okay, but once you get out more than 2 years, you don't know what's going to happen, and I don't want to keep backing. My overall concern is you keep backing it up, mm-hmm. it up, and you may be faced with the need to look at a whole lot more than 10%.
Yeah,
and that's just my conservative nature, and I don't have anything to add to that.
Well, the only comment I can make to that is, again, keep in mind that the difference between this and previous years having these conversations is that we have changed the reserve target fairly significantly.
Right.
So it's not that we are losing ground. We're just saying how aggressively we want to get to that and balancing the impact to our customers. We're not trying to claw our way, out of a hole. We are just trying to forecast, balancing, getting to where we think it's the right reserves target based on conversations with rating agencies, what our peers are doing, what's kind of best practice in the industry, and the impacts to customers.
I hear.
And I guess that's why the third plan doesn't work for me, because it really is not we're not making any progress in the first 2 days progress, 4 days progress.
Yeah. So. Well, keep in mind that assumption is based on, if you built in where we are going to land days cash on hand,
right,
that 98 is going to go up.
Right, but if they all went up 10, the difference would still not be. Is that the implication?
You can make that basic assumption.
I'm just curious, and I have a question. The past years, what year was the last, or how often you go up and do the presentations and planning ahead to increase the water? So I'm sorry, but this is my first time seeing the graphics of what was the last year that you increased X percentage.
Last year was a 5.4% increase. About 3 of that was Water General, and 2.4 was City of Everett.
And I think this is another topic where these they're pretty complex. And I think it would be very helpful for you to really sit down and have a work session so that you, I think that you will get a clear answer to your question, your inquiry.
Thank you.
And this is sort of on the heels of not doing rate increases for a few years, because we did have 200 days cash on hand. We did have and so to Tony's point, when you do that, you don't increase rates, then potentially get yourself in a position where you really have to catch up.
Yeah. It's just a different way I look at it.
Well, you,
and having it through the wars.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, and I have another question. When COVID impact, did you give the relief to the community members?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
When COVID impact, do you give a relief to our community members through the water?
Yeah, so the years 2019 through 2021, we didn't have a rate increase at all.
Okay, thank you.
And on the electric side, I remember we were going to have one, but then when the pandemic happened, we chose, we purposely chose not to do it.
Yes.
Good to know. Thank you.
So, okay, go ahead.
The only other thing that I really had was with next steps and the fact that our goal today was just to come to you with these additional scenarios and showing you the impacts on what it would look like for the majority of our customers, as well as our day's cash on hand, and just seeking, obviously, your
head nod.
Yeah, your head nod on which glide path you'd like us to take.
So, commissioners, what are your thoughts? I expressed an interest in the 7.25% one. I think it's important that we get all this out in the open and how we feel about it.
Well, I'm listening to what John is telling us. But, you know, like I would say, once you go out over 2 years, you don't know what's going to happen, right? I mean, you don't. So I, with serious reservations, I will support. And then I will remember.
Well, I wouldn't expect you to forget.
This one is written in ink.
Well, for me, it's hard for me to give my opinion. It's my first meeting today, and I have a lot of homework to do to, you know, educate myself by use of the information, and it's overwhelming, so I cannot say I support or not support, because I need to look at it the past. And honestly, when I, you know, doors in my campaign, every single door they open is like, please, I mean, don't increase this. So I have a lot of things to do in order to devise. Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I will take that as we're looking at more of a 7.25. So on January 21st, we'll come back for the public hearing of the 2025 Water Utility General Retail Rate Adjustment of 7.25. And then February 4th, we will look for action on that with a effective date of March 1st. And then separately, just because we did talk about this earlier, we did the public hearing earlier today, and on January 21st, we will do the public hearing in action on the City of Everett pass-through of 2.5%, which will be effective February 1st.
I have a question regarding the public hearing. So how do you communicate the public hearings to our constituents?
And we post it, but
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I don't know who can better answer that question. But
can you repeat the question?
How do you communicate the public hearings to our constituents? How do you send the memo or, hey, we are going to do the public hearing this day and we need your input or whatever, and all the community members can participate and be more active? So I don't know. because it's really important to do so. It's something that if we're going to increase, it's going to impact the package to everyone, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, Aaron Swain, the communication specialist. So we put notices in newspapers. We also put it out on social media. It's all over our website. So we put it in a number of different places to make sure people know what's going on. The agenda's all there and everything.
I'm just curious, and I ask that because I'm experienced in city council. When we have, I mean, the public hearings, we don't have as many participants as we want to.
Yeah.
And then when we pass something, and then the public, we receive a lot of emails, say, how dare you, right? It's like, yes, you need to come in. So
yeah, we try to publicize as much as we can.
Okay, thank you.
Good question.
And surprisingly, I don't know why, but we don't seem to get much feedback on our water rates. We get some feedback on our electric rates, but I don't know why that is on water rates.
Many people, they are not aware as they this water through the PUD too. I get that information when I was outside during my campaign, and it's like, oh, that's water too involved. And we have some of the electricity, so
one of the interesting things in terms of communicating a series of hearings is I've learned over the years that without something accompanying it that explains what it is, the average customer will be overwhelmed. And so that's always been a frustration for me. Yes, they can come to the hearing, but when they start seeing our presentations, cost of service studies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they're lost.
Yeah, and I'll just say from a governance standpoint, we're actually very unique because we talk a lot about what is legally required in the threshold versus what do we do to go above and beyond to be transparent. We continue these hearings multiple times to give multiple opportunities for folks to attend and participate. But it's a good governance discussion on where and how we want to handle these to be accessible and be transparent to our customers. The law actually only requires kind of minimal notice on your website. It used to be the paper of record. Nobody read the legal notices in the back of the newspapers. We have great websites now, and we publish all over the place trying to go above and beyond. But it's a good discussion and an appropriate discussion when we think about reaching all of our customers and allowing them opportunity to participate.
Thank you. I agree with that, but without education, they're not going to know what they're listening to.
And it is, education is crucial. So there are many community members that belong to different cultures that they are not able to read and write in their own languages. So even though the UPOS is like how they're going to read. So, and it's a good topic to process and talk about it. Thank you.
So just one more, this is a little bit to your earlier comments, Commissioner Olson, to Peter on the electric rates. So some of my comments were with that in mind. You'd asked about having a better understanding of the assumptions, risks, and what's that look like in the out years. So I want to make sure when we come back with this, you know, schedule using the 7.25, that those expectations are met, at least from the water, because we still have the opportunity to meet that. I'm not worried about that. I just want you to feel comfortable that you have that information that it sounds like you were missing.
My fellow commissioners, so that I've already said I will support it. I don't like it, but I'll support it.
But I think to that point, though, if we could go back to slide 5. So it would be nice to, the next slide, that slide, it'd be nice to know what our choice will look like with the assumptions about rate increases in those following years, and maybe to answer your question from the electric side is if we change some of those assumptions, how can we get to 150 quicker or sooner?
Sure.
And of course roll in the 10 days that John just gave us as a late Christmas present. Mm-hmm. Or you give it as a late Christmas present.
On the electric side, to me it's complicated by the fact that the NCOBs and the rate classes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for example, Christina, is I'm gonna make it up if the increase is 7.25%. So family residential they pay like, I'm going to put an example, maybe $100, how much they're going to pay. I mean, people, they ask that, and it's like pretty visual. So maybe if it's some example, like,
yes.
Give me like, and, it's like, okay, I can process.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the previous presentation, you have that lined out. And again, here, looking at the 7.25, their monthly customer charge would be the $27.64. And their commodity rate on average, excuse me, would be $29.58 for a total of $57.21.
Thank you.
Yeah. Looks like you have a question.
Oh, no.
That's all I really have for today, unless there's other questions.
Well, I will comment on the City of Everett pass-through. So I think that is a good example of communicating where our cost. So over the last several years, this is actually where most of our cost has come from.
Yeah.
Is from the City of Everett. They're raising their rates we're disposed for water from them. So I think making this aware, putting this on bills, I think it's helpful to understand that these are things beyond our control.
Is it pass through separate? Yes, it's separate.
Yeah, because over the last I think since 2019, we've seen rate increases cumulative of about 40% from City of Everett, which has put a total of approximately 9 to 10% burden on our O&M.
Any other questions, Christina?
No, thank you for the presentation.
All right, great job, Christina. Thank you. That's it for our presentations this morning.
Okay, well, now we go to the general manager report.
I don't have much to report. Two things I was going to give you an update. I think, as you are aware, we had selected our new COO, Amy Carson, and she will start on February 10th, and we moved into our in-person interviews this coming Friday for our CFO position. So hopefully we'll have good news after Friday with a new CFO selected. So
yeah, the COO, interesting background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excited to have Amy join the team.
Can you remind us, when is she?
February 10th.
But we still have a few possibilities of storms left.
Yeah. And Mark Flurry has graciously agreed to serve as the interim within the next month or so. He'll do very well in that position. Mark is really having a big impact on helping that move in a good direction. That's really all I have. We're just trying to finish things up from 2024 and get ourselves poised and ready to go hard into 2025. Lots of exciting things on the agenda for this year, and continuing to try to do all we can to serve our customers and serve our communities and take care of our team PUD.
Questions or comments in John's report?
All right.
Well, it is now 10:53 a.m. and our meeting has reset. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission meeting room at 1:30 p.m.